I'm married. My husband and I are actually New Jersey natives, but we've been out here for over 5 years now. So for all the great reasons to be out here in California. And we plan to stay out here and start a family eventually.
Oh, that sounds great. That sounds perfect. Do you have a dog?
I do not currently have a dog, but I did grow up with dogs. So I do love dogs.
What kind of dogs did you grow up with?
Same with John. I've had 3 golden retrievers. So yes, we love
them. They love the outdoors and going for a walk and all that good stuff.
Great family dogs as well.
Yeah. So so tell me about you. Jeff, are you married? Do you have kids? Do you have a dog? Tell me about your life.
Yeah. So I have 3 kids. I have an 8-year-old, a 6-year-old, and a 3-year-old.
Oh, my.
Yeah. So
Mackenzie, your quiver is full.
Mackenzie is the oldest. She's a girl. She's 8. And then Madeline is 6. And Gavin is 3. And then wife, Kristen. And I currently have 1 dog. But I've been looking to get another one. So
good.
I don't know if we do call-ins, but I need some advice.
Okay. So, yeah, I just saw on Facebook an Aussie looking for a home.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they're just so smart. Oh, okay.
But never owned one. So, anyways, currently a dog is a yellow lab.
Oh, yellow labs. They're just love bunnies. Oh, my gosh. So, I have a beast, Bernice Mountain Dog, and a beast hound dog. Well, the hound dog is not stocky. It's just kind of got long legs. It's a hunter. You know, it goes by its nose. It sniffs everything. And I come in and it just sniffs all the 45 people I shook hands with and the, you know, cats they owned and the dogs that those 45 people own. And my dog picks up every single scent. You know, it's just so annoying. So we're here today to talk about Parks and Rec. And so we began with dogs. So let me ask you, what are the opportunities for dogs in our public parks, John?
So we have, as most of the listeners know, Alston Park is our go-to dog park. It is about 160 acres and a good portion of that.
Yeah, half of it.
Yeah, is available for off-leash. We have an area known as the Canine Commons, and those are 2 fenced-in areas, one for smaller and shy dogs, and one for the larger dogs to socialize and get some exercise. And then basically just north of that area, all the way to the back of the park, is also available for off-leash.
Yeah, it's a great hiking area.
Right.
Great hiking area. And so we have the other parks, though. You can take your dog, but it's on leash. Is that correct?
It is. Shirtlift Park is another one that we have made off-leash, and it's entirely fenced in.
So, where is that?
So that is over on Shelter Avenue, right next to
Brazilian Steakhouse?
Oh, no. This is over by Alta Heights Elementary School.
Oh, that one. Yes. Yes.
Beautiful setting. It's a very long, narrow park, and it's bordered by a creek. Lots of really nice, mature trees in the back.
And it's off-leash?
It is off-leash.
No, I didn't know that. You heard it first here. Let me give you some dog barks. There we go. Happy dogs. Okay, so there's that little park over there by Brazilian Steakhouse. It backs up to Highway 29.
Klamath Park.
And I know a lot of my friends take their dogs there off-leash. But that's not an official off-leash park.
Not sanctioned.
It's just a risk. Okay. Okay. Gotcha. All right. So let's talk about Parks and Rec. So first let's talk about projects, because I think people love to know about about things that are coming up and what is happening. So, Jeff, why don't you lead out? Tell me about Playground Fantastico.
Yeah, Playground Fantastico is a great example of a project that we completed. That was in September, right?
Yes. Yeah, so we led almost a 12-month renovation project for Playground Fantastico.
It's gorgeous,
and it was a really exciting project given the park's history, originally being a community built park. So it opened up some opportunities to do some fun work with the community to redesign the park, make sure it met the needs of the community, and was something that we were proud to put out.
And so we have coming more shade structures. Who wants to take that?
Yeah, so we're doing some planning in a couple of our parks, Fuller Park and Dry Creek Park, both high-use parks that have picnic areas currently. And we've identified those as parks that could really serve the community with pavilions.
Do we have the budget for that?
We do currently have existing funding for those projects.
So those are real projects that you expect to happen?
Correct, yes.
So that's Dry Creek Park and...
Fuller Park.
Oh, okay. Fuller Park. Isn't that just a beautiful park?
Wonderful park, yeah.
Is that like your... What's your favorite park?
Oh,
Jeff?
That's a tough one. I always have to say that I love all the parks the same, so I give them all my love, but... When you're talking about trees, Fuller Park probably has the best
representative. Oh, yeah, because it has. It's
trees.
Kind of a botanical garden.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, Fuller Park is just really special. Okay,
John. Well, one of the cool things about the shade structure for Fuller Park is we're going to install a large gazebo there.
Yes, so for music.
Right, so it can be multi-purpose. It can be rented or utilized on a first-come, first-served basis for picnics. But then we've had a very successful summer concert series there this past year.
It's awesome.
And it's going to return again this year for 5 dates. And I'm not sure we'll have that structure in the ground by then, but certainly for the summer of 2021. But on June 11th, we're going to have Dr. Loco's Rockin' Jalapeno Band on Thursday.
Sounds smoking hot.
Doesn't it? And on June 25th, these are all Thursdays, the Shebang Steel Drum Band will be playing.
I love steel drums. So Jamaica, reggae.
Right? Yeah. And then on July 9th, Nobody from Nashville, which is a mix of styles from bluegrass to country. Yeah. And on July 23rd, Rusty Zen is reggae music. And then wrapping up on August 6th is Gigi Amos, which is a guitarist and vocalist.
Okay, and those are all on Thursday evenings at like, 5:30. Is it like 5 or something? Yeah, 5:30. 5:30 to 7 or 8?
I think we're going to extend it this year to, I think it's to 7:30.
5:30, 7:30, yeah. That'll be perfect because it's a school night. It's a work night, but still it's a great way. It's a great way to come out. So, park structures at Fuller Park and Dry Creek Park. Now, Dry Creek Park's where my family does a little family reunion, and we will be very grateful to have some shade structures there. So, Alston Park, we're going to do some more restrooms?
Oh, yeah. So, that's, as we were mentioning earlier, that park serves all types of users, hikers, equestrians, dog walkers, families. And so we'll be replacing the portable restrooms there with permanent restrooms. And I know the community is really looking forward to that.
Now, what would you say is our highest used park? Our most used?
I would say Kennedy Park because we have so many programmed activities there. We have softball leagues. We have baseball. We have the BMX. We have the Pelosi Center, which is a really a nice go-to spot for birthdays, anniversaries.
How many does that hold in the Pelosi Center?
I think it's about 140 is the capacity.
Wow. That's really good. Yeah, I see. Because I go to BMX all the time with my son, and I see people going in and out of the Pelosi Center. Okay, so let me ask you, you mentioned special events already. You mentioned the Fuller Park concert series, but let's talk a little bit about the Oxbow. that was phenomenal. So we had a person come and build a stage and then say, okay, I'm going to do private concerts, but you can have it too. How's that working?
So it's working out really well. We signed a license agreement with Mad Dog Presents, and they're affiliated with the Blue Note Napa. And so what's interesting, when we opened the Oxbow Commons, it was a priority for City Council to try to find a way to energize that through events. So we've successfully moved our July 4th celebration down there. You see Earth Day down there. There's just a whole host of special events that are starting to land there. And we had last year we entered into a license agreement with Mad Dog Presents. And the way that is structured is that for every 5 gated concerts they have, they will provide a free concert for the community.
Okay.
And so this year they've booked 15 dates. So we're expecting three free concerts. And they're going to kick the season off this year. They've announced their first show is going to be June 27th. And that's with Andrew Bird, Calexico, and Iron and Wine. And so we're really excited about that because it's really gaining a lot of attention as a go-to spot for people, not only to come and listen to some world-class music, but then to move around the Oxbow and the downtown area and experience all that our downtown has to offer.
Oh, that's so fantastic. So what about our 3 free concerts? What are those going to be?
So we have not announced who the bands are yet, and they're still working on booking those. But as soon as we do, we'll make sure that we get the word out. And our plan is to spread those out throughout the summer. So
remember that we're here every Monday morning. And so if you shoot us an email, oh, guess what's happening? You know, we can announce it live to the world. And then this show is taped and then re-airs on Fridays. So it's up twice. Okay, so we have the Oxbow concerts, we have the Fuller Park concerts, and Arbor Day. I'm going to turn to you, Arbor Day, because you're like Mr. Trees guy. Tell us about Arbor Day.
So speaking of Austin, Arbor Day is going to be held at Austin Park this year. And
okay.
We're going to do it on Saturday the 25th.
Of
April.
April 25th.
April 25th. We don't have exact start dates at this point, but we're thinking the event will start around 9 in the morning and should go till roughly noon or 1 p.m., but people are welcome to stay. The park's open. We've got a really great event planned. There's going to be trainings for proper pruning of trees. We're looking at planting anywhere from 40 to 60 oak trees. That's kind of an oak tree park, and we're trying to add some native feel back to it. There'll be some things there for the kids to do. There's also going to be some food provided. So it's going to be a really, really happening event. And over the year, we plan to plant larger trees to get that kind of immediate gratification. So mainly the planning will be on the entrance of the park. Anyone that's familiar with it, there's an entrance to the park as you come off the parking lot. So we plan to do the majority of our planting there in the front. So should be a great event. We're really excited about it. We're getting the word out for sponsors, and there'll be more to come. But for now, this is, you know, it's looking to be quite an event.
Will you have the master gardeners involved as far as the tree pruning, or what are your thoughts?
So right now we're looking to get some sponsors who will sponsor trees from some local tree service companies.
Oh, good.
And then we're working with them to do some informational things to do on proper pruning practices, planting practices. So
let them have a table for information or something. Maybe that's a way that we done that in the past, where we ask our nonprofits to come and set up a table. That would be a good idea, to have the Master Gardeners or maybe Van Wyndens or any of those kind of people could set up a table and talk about, this is May is coming, and this is what you want to plant in May.
Yeah.
Or, another good one would be an above ground gardening table.
Sure.
About And another table could be composting and waste. You can have like these information tables because that's duplicity of your work. Because if you've got recycling there with a table on recycle and yard waste and food waste, then they'll put it out in their newsletter and they'll let people know and their people will show up. And
yeah.
You know, so that'd be fun. That's okay.
Right. We also partner with the Resource Conservation District. They'll be there this year. We have a really strong program with them that's called Acorns to Oaks.
Oh.
And up in the uplands of the park, they for the last several years, they've been organizing plantings of oak trees from acorns. And then we'll have work days where they'll go and clear around the seedlings to make sure that they don't, the grasses don't compete for them to be sustainable. And so that's another really, really good partnership that we have for the care and feeding of that park.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah,
another table you can have is that new popular thing that you see all the time being posted on Facebook and social media where you bury dead bodies in a pod and plant it in the ground, it becomes a tree. Have you seen that? Yeah.
I haven't come across that one yet.
Yeah, instead of a casket or a coffin or incineration, you put them in this gauze bag and you put them in the ground and then they become the nutrient for the tree that's on top. It's disgusting. It's disgusting, but we got to talk about disgusting things. That's kind of out there, yeah. But a lot of people are really getting into that idea, you know, environmentalists and such. Okay, what is the Park Ranger Program?
So the Park Ranger Program is a program that we've done for a while now. We have a couple classes out there and a couple have come and gone, but we've got two main programs. One is Reading with the Ranger. So this is meant for younger children, and they'll go do a walk and they'll read with the ranger. And some available dates that are still available is March 7th and April 4th. And so this has been a pretty successful program. We've had quite a few people come out, and the rangers that run it, they really love it, and they're kind of nimble with depending on the group that they have there. And one great thing to point out is that it's free. So we already have the rangers, so we provide the Read with the Ranger class at no cost. So
that is awesome. And when is that? Which time?
So available dates still are March 7th and April 4th, and they're in our rec guide, and you could also find them on our website. And then one more program that they do is called the Little Nature Explorers. So this is a really cool, unique thing, and it's meant for ages younger kids up to 3 years old and usually chaperoned with a parent. Again, this is free, and we do have two dates already set aside for that. It's March 26th and April 3rd. And this is just really a cool interactive thing that the rangers are doing with the kids. They'll be taking little short walks, you know, finding butterflies, finding lizards, whatever they find in there in nature, and just getting
there. Where is it at?
So it's going to be at Kennedy Park.
Okay, now I know that the Ranger program is kind of new. We started that with Peter Mott. That was like his baby. So what was the reason for the Ranger program,
sure.
John?
So the Ranger program, we're in our second year now, and it was really brought okay, John, get this out. It was really brought along for a couple of reasons. One was for enhancing the security in our parks.
Oh.
We had been using a security company to close the parks that have gates at night. And they were encountering a lot of issues where we believed that there wasn't adequate information being conveyed to the people about what is the hours of operations, and just what is acceptable and what is not acceptable behavior. And so we created the rangers to be ambassadors of the park system and also to start to monitor going on. And they've made a lot of progress and a lot of successful traction with being able to document the types of activities that are going on that shouldn't be going on, and also to issue a very nice, friendly way to inform people about being good users of the parks.
And so how many rangers do we have?
So we have five part-time rangers right now. But this year in our current budget, we've had approval to bring on, in addition to that, a full-time permanent ranger.
Oh.
And that actually is going before city council at the next council meeting. And
wow.
Once that's approved, we'll be recruiting to hire a full-time permanent ranger. So we're really, really excited about
that. So would the permanent ranger then oversee the part-timers?
Yes, that's correct.
Now, the park ranger program, I thought, was more of like a docent program, more like free people that are maybe retired that want to give back. So it's... people are actually paid to be...
They're actually paid employees, and their primary job is really for park security and monitoring what's happening in the parks and making sure that they're closed when they're supposed to be closed, that the restrooms are locked, and that's really their primary job. And so as the program has grown, they've developed some capacity to do some of the interpretive programs that Jeff mentioned. We do have a park docent program, and we're really excited. It's in its infancy, and it's right now just occurring at Alston Park. But we have a local resident, John Futini, who is he has his master's degree in history, and he's just a real history buff about all the background of this whole region in the country. And he's been leading volunteer hikes through Alston Park, talking about the native plants and animals that are there, as well as the local history.
So, yeah, so that might be kind of our next level, is to think about docents in our parks, like Fuller, Kennedy, Alston, any parks with history, Dry Creek Park, any parks with, you know, to have actual free docents, retired people that would want to talk about, you know, ways to use the park and lead fun activities, maybe on a Saturday morning at 9 o'clock or something. That might be another layer, and the park rangers could kind of oversee that.
Absolutely.
I love docents.
Docents are fantastic.
When I go back east, you know, every single place you go has one of those history markers. In 1795, this happened.
Right.
Or see this bullet hole in this building? This happened in the Civil War, you know. But then there's docents dressed in period costumes that tell you about it, and they all work for free. They get their costumes, but they volunteer for free every Saturday morning at 10 or whatever their shtick is. But I love that everywhere I go back east in Williamsburg or anywhere I go, there's docents. And
yeah,
they do a real big bang up of that.
They really do. And there's so much to attract docents to our park systems.
Oh, I think so. We've got such heritage, Indian, Spanish, Mexican.
Oh, yeah. Even like Fuller Park, even though they're not considered docents, we have a really strong relationship with the Master Gardeners. And throughout the summer, they lead a monthly hike through the park, an interpretive program where they identify 43 different trees from literally around the world. And they talk about the history of
the
tree. Yeah,
see, that kind of thing. If
yeah.
we could do that every Saturday morning, I mean, think how our fourth graders could eat that up. And then we could go through the schools and encourage the teachers to have, what is that called, field trips, where their kids go and earn extra credit. So maybe five kids would come, take pictures,
right.
write up, make a scrapbook, turn it in, report it to their class, and get extra credit.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of ways to really expand our park system without expanding our money.
That's right. One of the things that we've been really successful with, and it's rather in its infancy, is a Friends of the Park program.
There you go.
And we have Friends of Westwood Hills Park was the first organized group, and they organize several times a month work parties where they get as many as 50 volunteers to come up and help pull invasive plants from the
understory. I've seen them many times.
Yeah, so they're that's really, really strong program. And in fact, one of our Parks and Recreation commissioners started that program, Kevin Hansen. And he is really interested in helping us expand that into other areas, into neighborhood parks. I really believe Fuller Park is Alston Park. Both of those are prime locations where there's so many people that love those parks, and we'd love for you to connect with us.
Alston has such a loyalty.
Absolutely.
I'm an Alston Parker. Yeah. Okay. So I think the parks program has a lot going on. It offers a lot. So how many parks do we have?
55.
We have 55 parks, and they go everywhere from tiny little pocket parks all the way up to Kennedy Park. And I know we have some plans for expansion and some plans for more things to happen, weather-related changes. What things are you thinking that we have coming?
So, as Allie mentioned, she's working on several smaller projects this year to basically enhance and improve park infrastructure. She talked about the restrooms and the shade structures, but we're also doing a lot of less sexy type things like resurfacing all of our sports courts, putting color coding on those, repairing pathways and trails throughout the park system to make those more accessible and just get them up to date. We do have probably our largest park that's in the, has a plan for it, is the phase one of Kennedy Park improvements. Back in 2015, we went through a community engagement process.
Right, you made a master plan.
Came up with a master plan.
But then there was no money for it.
Right, very little money. Yeah.
Very little money.
Very little. So,
well, I mean, we got those pavilions covered, and, you know, there were a lot of improvements at Austin Park. At Kennedy Park.
Yeah. So we're working now to try to scale phase one to the available funding that we have. We do have somewhere in the neighborhood of $8 million for park improvements. And we're looking to see how we might be able to move forward with planning of phase one to make the most important investments in the park, which are two more softball fields, some synthetic turf, soccer field, some improvements to the entryway of the park, adding, enhancing the gardens and the creating an edible forest. So we're really looking forward to try to advance that thinking here within the next few years.
Well, what about Garfield Park? Weren't we looking at doing some stuff out there and there's no money for it?
Yeah, Garfield.
You have a plan, but there's no funding.
Right. Garfield Park has a master plan to build out the 7 acres that are undeveloped just to the west of Salvador Creek. And that calls for a community garden. It calls for a play structure, a restroom, a walking path. We're really excited about that, too. But, yeah, the challenge is how do we cobble together the capital funding to make these dreams a reality. We've been working on several ways to do that. The city has a park in lieu fee that it's basically California law that if you have a certain amount of parkland in your city, you can exact development impact fees from new development to help cover the impact of new people moving into the city. You need to have more park facilities. So we're looking at restructuring that. Those fees haven't been updated in over 20 years. So we've been working on a fee study to try to, you know, bring that up to really what the current value should be. We've been doing a lot of work with the Foundation for Napa Parks and Recreation to help them become more relevant so they can be a fundraising arm and an adjunct to
capital. I've never heard of that.
Yeah. See what I mean? They're not so relevant
right now.
You have a foundation.
I consider myself a little bit invested and involved and aware, and I didn't know you have a foundation.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Well, okay, so two questions. So first question, okay, I've brought this one up a bazillion times. We have chain link fence everywhere. I would love, love, love to see us take some of these pocket parks in some of these neighborhoods, like that tiny park. The first one that I think of is that tiny park on Laurel Street near where it curves Laurel. You know that park? I can't think of the name of that park on Laurel Street. I know parks have a name, but...
They do.
But my passion is, and especially I think my passion is more relevant. My ask is more relevant. What's the name of the park?
It's Laurel Hills Park.
Laurel Hills Park on Laurel Street.
And it's just a
sweet little park that just kind of has a little hill in the back. So I think my ask right now of the three of you is more relevant because as we keep building in Napa, And we build up, you know, and we compress in with ADAs, and people are more stack and pack. We're trying to get more condensed within our footprint to not expand our footprint, but to keep our Napa footprint and be more condensed. You have more people with dogs that live in apartments and that have tiny backyards the size of this room. And so I'd like to see more chain link fence structures in our parks, like 40 feet long and maybe just 20 feet wide. Because a lot of the people that live in these smaller, more compact places have smaller dogs. You know, there's a lot of chihuahuas and shih tzus and little yappers, you know. And 20 foot long by, 40 foot wide by, 40 foot by 10 foot, just a long kind of dog run, because these dogs really don't get to run off leash, you know. And if you could do a little, you already have the park, and you already have like a back corner somewhere, and it wouldn't cost much to just chain link fence and put a gate, and then let people have a tiny place their dogs could run off leash. And that has been such a passion of mine for 20 years. At one time I talked to a fencing company, and they said they would donate fencing if we wanted to do that. And I talked to some members of the park board, and they said, oh, great idea, you know, but it kind of vaporized, because there's lots of great ideas. There's lots of demand for your time, your money, your interest. But I think of some of this smaller pocket parks that don't have playground structures. They're just a place where people play frisbee, throw balls and stuff. I think it would be a great thing. You could chain your dog in there. Your dog could run and your kids can run. And I just think that's still one of my missions. So just consider yourself asked.
You raise a good point. I think, we're always trying to balance out the investments that we make so we can affect everybody, you know.
I think a lot of people on the lower end, I just want to say one more thing about this. A lot of people at the lower income level don't have the big trucks to throw their dogs in and haul them up to Alston Park or take them to Dillon Beach. I haul my foster kids and dogs to Dillon Beach once a month. You know, a lot of people don't have those resources, and especially they're living in stack and pack and compressed housing. And that's why that one on Laurel Park really catches my attention, because I drive by it all the time. And I see people all the time with dogs on leash. I've never seen anything bigger than maybe 20 pounds. You know, they're small dogs. And there's always people out there, and they're pushing the stroller, and they've got the dog. And I think, oh, how much that dog would love to be let loose. You know, it's just dogs' inherent nature is to be let loose.
You also make a great point, because we do have many parks, sufficient parkland within our city, but a lot of our parks are underdeveloped. So yeah, they are very passive.
And that would be a tiny investment, especially when at the Corpyard, we already own the chain link fencing. You know, you can just go borrow it from one department and invest it in another. And it would be the labor of putting it in. And then you'd have to do, you know, whatever you wanted to do, asphalt chips or sawdust or something on the ground. But I think it would be a small investment that would reap a massive reward, especially of those lower income kind of parts of our community where there's a lot of apartments or a lot of small World War II houses, which mm-hmm. we have there in Homewood and Laurel Park area. And we would reap a real bang for our buck for a very tiny investment. So that's my 2 cents on that. Let's move on. I cannot tell you how excited I am when I get my rec book. When I receive my rec book, it's called Recreation Guide. When I get that in the mail, twice a year, I think,
Three times
a year. When that comes, my family and I sit down, we go through every page. I have my son go through and mark all the things he wants to do. I go through, mark all the things that I think would be fun. And we just go through that book. And we keep the book. We actually keep it and refer back to it. And so can you talk to me about the book? I mean, oh my gosh, there are so many programs in that book. Who does the book?
So our recreation staff really are the driving force behind it. I mean, we all chip in. Jeff and Allie add information. We try to have at least 3 or 4 common interest articles in there so people know about some of the things that are happening. Yeah. But it's primarily a way to be a resource guide for all the programs that we offer. We have been evolving this in my time here. I'm really quite proud of the presence that it has because it is a coffee table magazine now that will stay in your house for months. Yeah. We issue it 3 times a year. We're working on the summer guide right now that will come out in April. But we've started to do things like profile instructors so people get to know the kind of the human side of some of the people that are offering the programs. We try to do a little bit of information about some of our staff so they get to know the staff more. We've really been trying to create more exposure to the Rangers programs. And we really do have programs that are available for 6 months to 106 months. And it's always changing. This year, I'm really excited about some of the things that we've done that are a bit non-traditional, what we call our social sports programs, because a lot of people like to play basketball or volleyball or softball, but it's really because of the competition. And then there are a lot of people who just want to get out and meet new friends and have a relaxing time, but not really worried about the competition so much. About 3 years ago, we started a cornhole league, which is bag toss. And it has evolved. We started it at Dwight Murray Plaza, and it has evolved. We had it one season at Oxbow Market, and now it's at the CIA at Copia in the gardens. And it's got quite a following. And what's really cool about it is we still keep score. We have a tournament at the end of the season, but everyone is there for food and drink and just making new friends. And I've actually participated in that program every season that we've had it. And every year there seems to be a group of people that are new, that love it so much, they'll host an end of the season party at their home and invite all the players over. It's really created a cool way to just make new friends. We also have a bocce league at the CIA going on now for the same kind of thing.
Now, where are the bocce courts at CIA?
So they're also in the gardens, in the far east side of the garden, right near
in the
very front, right near where the little outdoor bar is.
And
so then we set up the cornhole tables on the pathways inside the garden, which is really cool.
And then there's plenty of room there for that.
Yeah, and then there's another great program that's taken traction all over the country. It's pickleball.
You know, we have them in the parade every year, the pickleball
that's
people.
Right, you do.
It's hysterical.
They are a crack up. We only have 2 tennis courts in the whole park system, and we've marked off one of the courts. They're over at Las Flores Community Center. We've marked one off, so there are 4 pickleball courts on there. And every Saturday and Sunday, they set up from 9 a.m. to noon, and they encourage people to just drop in, learn a little bit about the sport, and start playing some pickleball.
Wow!
And that has really gotten some traction. So we're really excited about that. I've been trying to encourage our sports guy, Dan, to come up with a senior softball league. A lot of seniors want to just get out and, again, have a way to socialize, maybe, during the middle of the day, so it's not too early, not too late, and just structure a way for them to get together and play a little bit of softball. So Dan's—
My husband's mother played senior softball, and she played from like age 72 to 85. Wow. And she was so passionate about it. And her league would win California state champion. And all the family would go down to the playoff in, you know, San Diego or LA or wherever it was. And then one year they won the state things, they had to go play in the national, which was in Vegas, and it was so hot. But anyway, yeah, seniors love to be active, whether riding bikes, playing golf, pickleball, or whatever. Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. Softball, love it.
Yeah, just a way to get them out, meet new friends.
We have a lot of seniors. Moving.
We do. And, you know, our senior center is something that we're so proud of. We were able to...
That is fabulous. Yeah. Let me give you some applause. That's so awesome. Yeah. It has just, it is off the hook now.
It is phenomenal. We were able to cobble together about $2.5 million to renovate the entire interior of the building. We've added a lot of features that have been able to allow us to expand programming.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
We've got new flooring in the large annex that allows you to have aerobics classes, dance classes. It's a very friendly, soft, cushiony floor. We've got a fireplace in our lounge now, another just great gathering place for seniors. And for the first time, we have had a mobile art program with visual arts, with photography, and we've got now three art programs going on at the Senior Center. We've got the a moving gallery in the hallway of the local photography club. Then we have artists that are over 50 displaying their arts in one of the other gathering rooms. And we also have a piece of art, a sculpture, that's going to go in the back of the Senior Center in another really comfortable, cozy gathering area. So
wow.
We're really, really excited about all that.
So tell me about Dwight Murray Plaza.
So Dwight Murray Plaza, as many people know, we went through a planning process to improve the plaza.
So first of all, tell me where it is.
So it is on First Street at the intersection of Brown Street, which runs parallel with Main Street. So it's right across
the former ugly big clock watchtower plaza.
Right, the former clock tower plaza. It's right across from the Carruthers building on First Street.
It's just a mess. It's got that steps going down, and it's got a fountain that used to be that isn't, that's ugly.
Yeah,
what are you going to do with that thing, John? And is that a park?
Well, it's a plaza. So, yes, we maintain it. We are actually going through a re-envisioning process right now with Public Works Department and our Community Development Department. We came up with a concept plan about 2 years ago that included some public art.
But proved way too expensive.
And so,
but recently we voted on some new ideas.
Yes, and so coming very soon this spring, in fact, in April, we'll be coming back to council with specific recommendations on how to do some short-term improvements, such as adding lighting, adding some more public art, and maybe...
In the hole?
Well, not quite yet filling in the hole, but just some things to image it up, add some exciting landscaping. And so we are also in a process of stepping back, looking at what funding we do have and what would be most important areas to reinvest in.
So we were talking about like painting the trees with circles and...
Well, they were actually, one of the recommendations was to put knitted socks around the trees.
Yeah, knitted socks around the trees and that are colors, like sweaters.
Yeah,
colorful things like you'd put over a hot dog. and there are a lot of little ideas that you presented like that.
Right.
So you're going to finalize all that and bring it back to us?
Yes.
Like next week?
Well, in April. Yes.
Let's move on that thing. Yeah. We have got to do something with that plaza.
And the other thing is, I think we're going to try to be very realistic on the funding that we have. What can we do to really give that
plaza
a
makeover? And that's the best way to do it, to say, okay, I have $749,000, and here's what I can do. I can do 1, 2, 3, or 4. You pick.
Exactly, yeah.
I mean, just tell us what we can do with what you have. I think that's just brilliant. Okay, I have to come to trees. Okay, trees are my thing. I love trees. I spent 2 years in horticulture at the University of Maryland, and I love trees. And we used to have to go out in the woods in the wintertime and identify trees just based on the bark and the growth structure and the root structure, the canopy or the lack of canopy, as well as, you know, kind of cheating with what are the dead leaves laying at the bottom decomposing, you know, trying to identify all the different trees in the park system. What are we doing about trees? I mean, I know we're at Tree City USA. Tell us about Napa Trees.
Yeah, so Napa Trees, we do a ton of things, not only in the parks. So I should probably start there. Is what we do maintain. We maintain all of our trees within all 55 parks, and then we also maintain roughly about 50,000 street trees that are in the right-of-way. And so we have
those are the dastardly things that tear up the sidewalks. Disgusting.
Some of them do. Some
yes.
of them don't. Yeah.
I was driving down Dry Creek the other day, and I looked at that row of sidewalks along the Dry Creek Park, and they are buckled. It's like a flipping roller coaster.
Yeah. So our urban forestry department has been working with Public Works very closely in a lot of these local streets paving projects and throughout the city working on dealing with these trees that, like you said, are uplifting sidewalks. So we've been dealing with those. And then, like I said, we have a really robust program where we really look at every single tree that may or may not be a problem. We have a process we go through to determine removal. And if that tree is chosen to be removed, then we replace that tree with the appropriate tree. So we don't have the situation that we have so often now. For example, if we have, you know, a really narrow planter strip, then we're going to be choosing a tree that doesn't have invasive roots. Or if we have short overhead power lines, we'd choose a tree that just doesn't grow quite as tall. So really a good program and a lot of effort put into preserving the trees we do have in the city.
Aren't you trying to do a map of all the trees?
Yeah, so currently we are trying to develop two things. One is an urban forestry master plan, and with that plan we'll have to go out and assess all of our trees and collect all the data from all of our trees.
Yes,
that's going to really help us operationally to get to get a better plan of how we do our operation, but also help to preserve and look at what we have for tree canopy and tree coverage throughout the city for the trees that we have in our parks and in our right-of-ways.
Absolutely. I love our trees, yeah. And I love that. Why do trees make the sidewalks buckle?
Well, there's a lot of different cases. Some trees just inherently have more aggressive roots and shallower root systems. Liquid amber.
Shallow root. Liquid amber is the worst.
That's one that has a pretty aggressive root.
I have one in my driveway that's torn up my driveway.
Yeah. Oftentimes.
My parking, you know, in front of my house, my own yard. I can't call anybody to help me. I got to fix that myself.
Yeah, so oftentimes, trees were planted in areas that they didn't fit once they became, you know, of age. And a lot of these trees are 30, 40 years old, and they can't fit within the planter area that they're in. But we do have specifications for using the correct trees, like I spoke about a little bit earlier.
Right.
So moving forward, you know, I think that issue will help a lot to mitigate those issues where we have, you know, issues.
So you take a street like Dry Creek, and going down Dry Creek past the park where all the trees have buckled the sidewalk. So if we remove those trees and plant the appropriate trees and fix the sidewalk, then yay. But then we lose those beautiful, massive trees. They're so gorgeous.
Yeah, and that's a good point. The traditional way would just to think of a long linear sidewalk with a small planter in the trees. But oftentimes there's things that we can do in some cases where we can reimagine how that sidewalk works, and we can create space for those trees and leave them there.
Oh, I love that. I'd love that. That's so beautiful. Okay, we are at the end of our time. You guys I can't believe we could easily talk for another hour. There is so much going on. So I want to end this with just a thought or comment. But one thought or comment I want to ask you is, when does the Parks and Trees Commission meet and invite people to attend? John, when we get to you.
Okay, so they meet every month, the third Wednesday of the month at 6 p.m. in the City Council Chambers.
We encourage you to come.
Oh, we'd love to have people come and give us some thoughts and feedback. We use that as a forum for many of our planning projects. We'll be talking about Dwight Murray Plaza over the months coming ahead to get some more public input on what's most important.
We'll be talking about Arbor Day, trees, talking about everything we talked about. And you can come to that with your thoughts, your ideas. You can share the good things that are happening and what you wish would happen. And if 40 of you would turn out the next time and ask for small chain link fence dog run areas in some of our lesser used pocket parks, I would be very happy. Okay, so closing thoughts or comments, Allie?
We just got a lot of exciting things coming up this year and in the future, so especially with our projects. So we're excited to make these smaller improvements and continue to conceptualize on our larger parks, such as Kennedy. So we're excited for what's to come.
Perfect. Jeff Giddings.
So with this summer-like winter that we're having here, I just encourage everybody to get out and see our parks. We've already had to start mowing, and so... it's like May, but anyways, get out and have fun and check out all 55 of them.
That's wonderful. I am so excited to be back outdoors again and have the beautiful weather to be able to go. John, thank you for bringing your team here today. It was such an honor. Always great to talk to you. I'm Doris Gentry. We're going to sign off. Talk So Kids Listen. We're all about families, kids, parenting, and enjoying Napa. You have a great day. We'll see you again next week, every Monday at 10 a.m. Woohoo!